Welcome to VHTV, your guide to talent, culture, and finance side of space startups. My name is Justice Killian. I'm a partner at Space Capital. We're investing in seed stage companies. I'm joined by Matt Jurtzen from Better Everyday Studios. Hey, Matt.
Hello.
And Brian Major from Ad Astra Talent Advisors. Hey, Brian.
How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, excited to be chatting with you guys today. This was my question. So sort of the context to set the stage, I'm not an engineer. My background is in economics, statistics, accounting. You know, I'm a finance and business person. And when a business person is looking to sort of level their career up, we have this whole sort of extra level of an MBA that teaches you what it means to be, a manager and how to lead and how to negotiate and, the skills that it will take to sort of manage people in a large organization. And there are thousands of books written on this topic. I mean, there is literally endless content, if you're in the business world to figure out how to sort of transition into a managerial role. When I look at the engineering landscape and the importance of moving from an individual contributor into sort of a managerial, a management leader, the landscape is much thinner. And, I went to a school with a lot of folks who were engineers who were trying to get MBA and level those skills up, but it didn't seem like it was, it wasn't the skills to go back into sort of an engineering role and manage teams and lead. It was really to go on the business side. And so, what I wanted to get your guys' take on today is, what do engineers transitioning into management roles, really need to get right?
Yeah, I'd love to take the first stab here. Like, I'm an engineer, and so I know engineers, right? And then I'd love to tee up Matt because he's our actual expert here. So, man, I think the key thing to knowing here is like the difference between the two, right? Being an engineer and an individual contributor as an engineer and managing people, it's very, very different. I mean, there's going to be some overlap in some of the responsibilities, of course, but like an engineer, what is it? It's very systematic. It's very numbers based. There's a lot of, black and white, right and wrong. And you can just like think of it very systematically. And management is largely about people and the nuances of people and that each one is unique and not often like you at all. And so it's like a very different problem to solve that you can't just take a similar approach as an engineer. And so, yeah, I'm curious to get Matt's thoughts about kind of the practicality of making that leap. It's a pretty big leap for people.
It definitely is. And I think what you said is so critical to the first thing you need to do in making that leap is just realizing that it's a new role. Realizing that it's a whole new thing, a whole new set of skills. Just to your point, about, there's not quite as many books. I did want to call out one book called The Fully Integrated Engineer, which is exactly about this, about helping engineers make the transition. It's what I do for a living now. Like it's the whole goal of Better Everyday Studios is helping engineers make this transition. And I think I'll start off by bringing up, like, I think the first most common mistake or the most common impediment that I think people fall into. And then I can mention kind of the three key skills that you need to develop. And I think the most common mistake that engineers fall into is with a leadership style that's known as pace setting. And so when you first hear of pace setting, it's I'm going to lead from the front. I'm going to set the example. I'm going to be the hardest worker. First in, last out, it all sounds great. But the problem is really what it boils down to, if it's the only leadership style you have, is it's, I'm just going to keep being the great engineer that I was and hope that people follow me, right? Which if you're being promoted, especially from that first rung an individual contributor to manager, you're basically by definition being promoted because you're the best individual contributor very often. Like that's usually why that promotion happens. And that again, almost by definition means other people can't keep up with you on a technical level. And so if you just keep, so what pace setting can turn into if you don't hold it back is, oh, I know I can get this done faster than them, so I'm just gonna do it. Oh, you're not getting it, I'm just gonna do it for you. It's like a combination of micromanagement and just taking everything over. And so that means the people on your team don't feel like they don't have a way to grow. They don't feel like they have, you know, any flexibility in what they do because it's just kind of always your way or the highway. And I think that's one of the most common traps that you can fall into if you don't realize, like Brian said, that this is a new job that needs new skills. You just rely on your old skills and expect that you're just going to set an example that people will follow. But if you don't develop other skills, then there's no way for them to follow you. You're not laying any groundwork. I don't, does that resonate? That kind of first problem yeah. resonate with people?
I think that's really good. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And I do agree with it wholeheartedly. I think there's also this interesting nuance that I think where I might challenge it is if you're going into a different team or a different company, I think then there's a good place for an exception to that rule is like, you need to build that respect and build that trust yep. with the team by yep. diving into the trenches. It still needs to be done artfully and not micro, yep. you know, we can get into that too. But I think like, you know, that even that though is a skill about people and knowing the differences between the situation. It's much more soft skill versus hard skill. But I think these are really great points.
Yeah. I was just going to say kind of to what Brian was saying, like, it's definitely, I'm not definitely not meaning to say that you should never pace set like that. Like it's a valuable way to do it. It's knowing the context in which to do it and not solely relying on it.
So I, Brian, you actually introduced me to a brilliant engineer. She's now at Varda. Her name's Wendy Shimata. And, you know, I had the opportunity to interview her and sort of reflect on some of the lessons she learned from evolving early in her career to an individual contributor and to a manager. And then now at Varda managing, you know, bigger teams. And, you know, one of the points she said was sort of exactly on this, where like, you have to have that ability to dive into the core principles and like show a methodical investigation and like a deep understanding of how you can work towards a solution to establish trust and credibility with the team, but you can't do that work, right? Like you have, you know, it exists, your technical competency exists to establish that trust, but then you have to step away to empower the other team to take it on, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. And so go ahead, Brian.
Well, yeah. And I think, you know, one of the practical things I think is worth like discussing here is like in making that transition, it is a pretty like big jump to go from not doing it to doing it in like an ownership capacity. And so I think like one thing to be on the lookout for early in your career and something that I was very interested in. I saw this is, you know, can be pretty successful at organizations, especially with internship programs, is like, how can you become a mentor first? How can you start with mentorship and practicing without kind of the official people management title and build that skill in that capacity? Because it's going to be hard. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to have to like figure it out. And so I like the idea of getting reps through mentorship and through practicing it early on, even well before you might like technically be qualified or for that promotion.
It's such an important thing. And I think the best companies have a process for kind of doing that intentionally. They don't do the thing that I said before of just somebody's a great individual contributor, somebody's a great engineer, let's make them a manager. They have systems or programs that people can use and be like, oh, they're a good, solid engineer, but they're also over here doing this mentorship program. And this, they're really showing that they can help people, or they're really good at teaching new engineers or onboarding new team members. Because yeah, it's a really important way to build those skills. And I think a good manager can do that as well in terms of preparing their team to become leaders, is saying, hey, you've been here for like for 2 years. We have this new person coming on the team. Can you kind of show them the ropes and just and give them that opportunity to start to develop some of those other skills?
And I think, I mean, a really good manager, a good leader will create that space for the team to take that ownership and do that work. I was talking to Daniel Meisner. He now leads RF at Northwood. And, you know, he was saying that as he grew into like a leadership role, you know, he realized the importance of giving the team the freedom to explore and innovate instead of like prescribing solutions. It was really focusing on communicating the values and the goals of the team and making sure that they're measurable or something to work towards, but letting them, you know, sort of own it and figure it out. And, you know, nothing demotivates people like prescribing a solution.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. Yeah. And then I think some of the other skills, so I teach a program that I call the Leadership Launchpad that is meant to be this exact thing where you know, what are the skills? And so it drills down to teaching what I think are kind of the three fundamental skills that you need to develop when you make this leap. And the three are, I'd love to get your all's feedback on this too. The skills are basically just building trust, giving feedback, and setting goals. You know, so separate, you know, if we want to think of the people skills, the soft skills space, all there's lots of things that you need to do: communication, executive presence, storytelling, empathy, all these things. But if you can boil it down to, can I intentionally build trusting relationships with other people, whether it's between the two of us or between groups of people? Can I intentionally build trust? Do I have the skill set to do that? Am I prepared to give feedback regularly, both, you know, good feedback, both positive feedback and that critical feedback to, you know, tell people, hey, I think we're going in the right direction. And can I give it in a way where they will actually listen and take that in and not kind of reject it? And then can I work with people to understand their goals, understand the company's goals, and find kind of a marriage between the two of saying, okay, here's what we need to try to do over the next 3, 6, 12 months in order to move you and the team forward. I think those are three things that there's certainly elements to that in an individual contributor, but if there were three key skills that I think you need to foster, those would be them.
Yeah, I'd love to add on to that second one about feedback. And I think it's can be harder to give feedback or to have teammates be receptive of feedback if you're not actively asking for feedback yourself and receiving 100%. That feedback well. And so I think that's a big thing that, one, you can practice before you're a manager, but is really important, especially when you are a manager. People are not as interested in receiving feedback if it's not a two-way street. And not only do they not, are they less interested in it, they might not be as capable of like doing it well, frankly. And so you have the opportunity to set that example as a manager. And again, you can practice this as an individual contributor too, of how do you ask for feedback and how do you receive that? Are you open and honest and appreciative and willing to go there and then actually act on it too, and not just have feedback be like, cool, I heard it, but nothing changes. These are things that are like really vital, in my opinion, to being able to make that next step and build that trust and have your team be actually excited about doing some of the hard things with you when things are going to get hard. And can you have those lines of communication? It starts by like leading by example in that space.
Man, I love those three points. I think those are generally applicable to any management position. And it's so clear. I mean, it almost gave me goosebumps. I love how clear that was. The only thing that I would add is a skill that I think is like sort of subtle or underappreciated in fulfilling those three, goals is the ability to listen. And I think a lot of times we think of managers and sort of leaders as, you know, talking and setting the clarity and communicating. And that is all very important. But I think that is most successful when it starts from really a position of listening and hearing and understanding, you know, your people and the teammates that you work with. And, you know, So yeah, I think that's often overlooked.
Yeah, I mean,
I love that.
That goes right back to like every person's like so different and nuanced, and this is such a unique situation, and how better to figure out how to navigate that than listening. It's so simple.
Tim Ferriss often ends his podcast by asking the question of, you know, if you had a billboard, a metaphorical billboard that everybody could see, what would you put on it? And if I had a billboard that every manager in the world could see, I would just put on it, just stop talking. Because that's what, in general, I think most leaders need. You're just, because and it's natural, right? Like there's, you become, I think we have this misconception of what it means to be a leader, in that very often we think being a leader means you have the answers. And so you may already have some of this imposter syndrome because you just got promoted. Maybe you got promoted in a team where you were already there. And so now you have all these coworkers who now they work for you, and you're just like trying to prove yourself and trying to be the one. I have, you know, like, yeah, we can solve this, and this is my best idea, and I have all these great ideas. You're trying to prove to everybody that you deserve to have this position, when in reality, all you're doing is making yourself seem less deserving in many ways. People can tell that you're kind of over accentuating this, and you're not doing what 100% is one of the most important things, is just listening to people.
So if I pull together, you know, everything that we've sort of said here, it seems like there's two important takeaways. One is really recognizing, you know, the change in the role from individual contributor to manager and the skills required. It is a meaningful shift, and recognizing how much that changes and being open and able to adapt to it. And then Matt's sort of three key points of what it takes, you know, to be a manager, which is, you know, building trust, giving feedback, and setting goals. Super clear, you know, if you can just do those three things really well, you're going to have an incredibly strong foundation. And, you know, if we're going to leave it with anything, you know, just stop talking and listen more. That's a really good way to wrap it up.
Perfect.
Yeah. Awesome.